You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I feel like who Art Ed?
We're trying to spice it.
Who Art Ed? Mr. Wood, Art Ed, me.
Good. Either way, it's ambiguous. It works on so many levels.
I know.
That's
off
to a great start.
Welcome to Who Arted, weekly art history for all ages. I'm your host, Kyle Wood, and once again, I'm going to be interviewing an artist today. I am really excited because Jess Phoenix is an illustrator, artist, designer who is doing absolutely stunning work, and I always love to pick people's brain and figure out how this happens. So thank you so much for joining me today, Jess Phoenix.
Thanks for having me.
I'm like I said, I'm really excited because I spend a lot of time nerding out about art history and just marveling at the different things people have done. And it's cool for me now as I get to find out from the artists themselves exactly how the magic happens. To get started, though, I always like to get into a little bit of background. So can you just tell me about yourself? Like, where'd you grow up? What were your interests, hobbies, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I grew up in Massachusetts, Stowe, Massachusetts, which is kind of a small ruralish town, kind of like maybe 45 minutes west of Boston. And I love to draw, love to make art, loved cats. That hasn't changed much. My parents were both artists. Like, my dad went to school for film at Mass Art, and my mom studied graphic design at Boston University. So it was kind of like not a surprise that I was into art as well. Same with my sister. She studied interior architecture and design at Wentworth, and I went to RISD. So everybody just did the art school thing, which is kind of a rarity.
So it's just the family business. You grew up always surrounded by art, and it was always an interest for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the path of like what I thought I would do with the art has definitely changed. But Yeah, the idea that, I mean, when I went to art school, I met so many kids who their parents were like, okay, well, you can go to art school, but only if you study graphic design or architecture. It's like, you have to make some money.
I know that. I went to art school and got a teaching degree. So I know exactly the importance of making a living at it and the safety and security of it. Although, if I'm going to be honest, I never went with the idea of being a studio artist. I went specifically to be a teacher because that's what I love to do. But I totally get that. And I know exactly those people who went there with like, okay, I can go to art school, but it has to be this narrow band. And I love, you know, that there are actually way more avenues for people to make a living in creative pursuits than I think a lot of people realize. You know, I mean, yeah. You're doing all sorts of cool and innovative design work that I want to get to a little bit later. But I just felt myself totally relating to that connection with the art school in RISD. So I didn't go to RISD. I went to SAIC, but I know similar worlds.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So Did you go into it? You said your vision of your practice changed a little bit. Were you like more painting driven going into it? I mean, you do more illustrator type stuff now.
When I went to school, I studied illustration, and I think they've changed the curriculum a lot these days to include all the different avenues that you can do with illustration. But I feel like when I was there, there was a big focus on like, okay, are you going to enter the comics world? Are you going to do comic illustration? Are you going to do editorial illustration? Or are you going to do children's book illustration? And I was very focused on being a children's book illustrator. I think like in second grade, I decided like, yeah, that's what I want to do. And I took like an extensive course at RISD about children's book illustration, and that completely turned me off to it, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Because that seems like an awesome sort of gig. What about it turned you off?
I think I had a teacher that kind of, she's a real, you know, she's an industry professional. She knew what sells. And I think maybe she probably imposed some of those ideas of what will sell a little early on. I mean, again, she was just trying to impart her vision and everything. But I had a crit once where I brought a concept. We were all supposed to bring a concept of a book that we would want to do. And I think like my idea, it was a little spooky, little Edward Gorey. Yeah. That was more my sensibilities growing up. I didn't want to just do sweet, fuzzy animals and everything, but she was much more of the sweet, fuzzy animal genre. And so I showed this piece of artwork that was supposed to represent a larger book that I had, that idea, that concept. And everybody in the class was like, I think this is great. And then finally she spoke up. She's like, I don't think this is marketable. I think you need to like just go in a different direction. And it really took the wind out of my sails. I know that there is room for that. There is room for kind of those spooky alternative voices in kids' books. But I don't know. It made me think differently on how I want to, I don't know, create art, express my art, what I want to be doing with my art.
See, that's so interesting to me, because when I was looking through your portfolio, your website, your Instagram feed and stuff, part of what drew me to it is your use of colors. It's so bright. It is so, I don't know how to describe it. It's like, it's soothing to me. I love it. I love looking at it. Everything is so visually satisfying. I would have not expected a spooky strain coming from you.
Yeah.
You know? And I know people are multifaceted and stuff, but I love hearing about these unexpected influences and interests and styles.
Yeah.
Which got me curious, like, who are some of the artists that you looked at and who inspired you early on?
Well, I do have I just wanted to say really quick that I do think I often talk about in some of my Instagram posts to my followers that like I create really bright art, yes, but like I wear a lot of black. I'm very moody. I'm like a moody goth at heart, and I create these really like bright things that it's just a different part of my, I don't know, character. But I think a lot of people wouldn't know that I'm incredibly sensitive and moody and, I don't know, always drawn to kind of the more macabre things, I guess, growing up. And that hasn't changed. But I don't know. Yeah. And then I have the side where I do a lot of bright art.
Now I'm just picturing, I think it was the IT crowd where they had the goth character who was talking about how to incorporate color into your wardrobe or something like that for goths to transition into normal life.
I love Noel Fielding. He is like wonderful. But as for artists, it's kind of interesting with that too, because I love color in the art that I enjoy. But another aspect of like the artists that I seem to enjoy, a lot of them are more abstract. I really Oh, man, I wanted to create abstract art. That's actually how, when I first started kind of trying to make art for myself that wasn't involved in, you know, my job or, you know, projects, I wanted to make abstract paintings, and I love them. I love looking at them. It's so much harder than it looks. It's really intense work. And I ended up going with flowers instead because I felt like that was a way for me to play with color that had a structure to it that could still be very organic and loose if I wanted it to be. But yeah, so like, I mean, I love Cy Twombly and de Kooning, Joan Mitchell, as far as like some of the more like classic ones.
Yeah.
And then like newer artists, I both love Dree Chapek, who is a local Seattle artist. We're actually friends with her. We have a painting of hers in our home. Oh, like thick oil paint. I don't paint with oil paint. When I painted with oil paint in art school, I was the one who was like meticulously scrubbing everything so it would be smooth. So, I mean, when I like these artists that have, I don't know, the ability to just huge gestures and brush work, like, oh, I still wish I could do that. And I might try it someday, but it's just not where I'm at right now.
See, that's funny because I could never get rid of the texture of my brush strokes. Mm. I was always like very heavy impasto in my paintings, like my, you know, and I wore my paintings. My jeans cracked when I walked, but I would see people like that who are so meticulous and like, you know, the person wearing gloves and a suit while they're painting and like everything is so fine. And I was always looking at that, like, how do you do that? And that's so funny that someone who works in that more refined way looks at the heavier brush strokes and thinks like, oh, how do you do that? I guess it's just we all approach it in a different way. But I think it's kind of interesting that you say you were really into the abstract art because, again, it was unexpected, but it kind of makes sense because when I think about those patterns and design that you're doing, it feels very sort of cerebral in the deliberate arrangement of those design principles and everything like that, which I guess we'll get into later, but that's just the sort of connection that I'm making as we're going. So, you know, you were really inspired, it sounds like, by a lot of the modernist movements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? So as you got out of art school then, did you start off in painting? Did you do a little bit of illustration work, you know, the books and stuff like that? Or did you go, you know, did you get straight into what you're doing now?
Well, it's interesting because like I was saying, I felt like when I was at school, you know, there were only these certain avenues that were really being talked about. And I did not know that there was a whole realm of designing for product and surface design and stationary products, gift products. So when I first graduated, back in the day when I graduated, you could get a paid internship. And that was my plan, that I was like, okay, well, I'll graduate and I'll get two paid internships and I'll balance them with each other. And I will then be able to at least make some money. And my one internship was with a graphic designer. She just had a small like office in Providence. And I worked with her doing, I think I traced an island in Illustrator and helped build a pamphlet. And it wasn't my deal. I mean, I'm glad that I did study graphic design a bit at RISD because I did have that sensibility of like, okay, like, design principles are always helpful to learn in tandem with illustration and fine arts. It's good to know that stuff. So, and also with my parents being, you know, I grew up using Photoshop and not a lot of kids have that. and then my other paid internship was working for a photo album and scrapbooking company, kind of helping design the surfaces, and like there were, you know, scrapbooking like books with illustrations and stickers, and I had to lay everything out and get it all ready. And that was the job that ended up turning into a real job. They offered me a full-time position there, and I got to go to China at the tender age of 23. That's cool. And then shortly after I got back from the trip, that that business went under. And so I had a, I don't know, that was scary, especially because I was about to get married in just like a few months. And Tom had had an accident. And I mean, Tom has been, you know, on the show a few times, it seems. And he's my husband, Tom thinks.
Yeah, just so listeners, Tom does Longchamp, has been on here before. And, you know, so you two met at RISD,
yes.
Right? And I'm just trying to think. So, like, you two got married a little bit after college.
No, and during college. I had graduated and Tom still had a year left. So we got married between his junior and senior year. So.
Okay. So would that have been like not quite 2007?
It was 2006.
It was before like the Great Red, 2006. Yeah. So then when you're out of college, you like me were getting just into the workforce right as like the Great Recession hit.
Yeah. I mean, right? I feel like Tom was closer to that because I graduated in 05. And so I, you know, got these jobs. And I mean, I did end up find another job after the other one went under. And I worked for a Easter basket food gift company, dealing with like licensing of images and designing things. That's the first time that I've ever like designed an Easter cookie on Illustrator. And then a few weeks later, I got a cookie from China that looked like the cookie that I made in Illustrator, which I didn't want to eat it. But it was really cool. Yeah, Tom was much more under the wire because, I mean, he graduated in 07. He got a job pretty quickly after graduating, and then everything went down in 2008. So then he was trapped at that job till things kind of leveled out a bit.
Yeah. So then I'm curious, what was sort of the turning point for you to get into like branching out into the design work you're doing now? Because obviously, you know, spoiler alert, you didn't stick at the company that went under or the,
yes.
You know, like, so what was the turning point for you to get to your current stage?
Well, there is a big gap. And in that gap, I worked for a company that I actually still work for. I've been with the same company for 16 and a half years, designing cards, journals, gift books. I actually art direct children's books, which is interesting because, you know, I've come at it from the other end now. I never made that children's book, but I help other people make some. And it's a wonderful job. And I am so thankful to have it. And I remember when I was thinking about what I truly wanted to use my illustration degree for, I was like, well, it'd be just so great if I could work for a company. And if they say, hey, I really want a pair, can you draw us a pair? Then I would do that pair in like a style and they would go, oh, it's wonderful. But I had people tell me like, those jobs don't exist. But this job was kind of like that job. And so that's why I think it's been such a really great place for me. I've grown a lot being there, actually. So how it all started to, you know, turn into my own stuff. I think after being there, when did I start? Around like 2007. And I've been at it for almost 10 years. And I found that I was getting prickly about having to make changes to the artwork that I was making for these various projects. I was holding things very tightly because this whole time I'm at this great job where I get to do art all day and, do I have time for art outside? I don't need it. I have so much fulfillment from what I do at my job, which is really cool, but it was actually really getting in the way professionally. For me, I found that I'd be more hesitant to make changes to something. Oh, can you change the color of that? No, I really love the color of this because can't you see like how this is so much better than something that would be more mass market? And it's just like, well, that's not your job, is to make stuff for mass market. And I kind of hit a breaking point where I knew I needed to find my art practice that was outside of my job, that was just for me, something that would be satisfying and, that I could do everything that I wanted with color, because that was one of the comments that people had, was I would create these designs and people would say, well, those colors are kind of vibrating a bit next to each other. And I would be like, but that's what I love.
That's the point.
All I want is to make colors vibrate. So that's when I, kind of started thinking, well, how can I play with color? And this was, 2015 that I was kind of really feeling the pressure that I needed to do something that was just for me. And try doing abstract. Actually, if you scroll like all the way back to my very first Instagram posts, there are some of those abstract paintings. Of course, they have a stupid Instagram filter on them to make them look old. And
it's a sign of the times. It's the way we did things for a while.
For sure.
I think that's so interesting, though. And I think, there's a point there that I found myself so hard relating to, where you talked about how doing a job that was creative, on one level, you felt like, it sounds to me like you felt like you were getting a little bit of that creative outlet that you just personally need through your work. But then because work was your creative outlet, it became hard to look at it as a commercial venture and take the criticism and the feedback because it was more personal to you.
Oh, very much so. Yeah. And like, I think I actually got pulled aside by my manager at the time. And she's like, hey, this is a big problem. Like the way that you said you wouldn't change that design. And I think I was struggling in other areas too, just, depression and anxiety, and those were kind of coming to a head. And I feel like, it was scary. I've always tried to, be good in school, get good grades, not be a troublemaker. And then for somebody to be like, hey, you're kind of being a troublemaker in this professional environment where we're trying to get things done. And I felt like a dog with its tail between its legs at first. And then I realized, I'm getting another shot to really turn this around. And part of that is making sure that I'm fed in other ways that aren't all relying on what I do when I come into the office every day.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good point, and that's a really important insight for people who want to go into a creative field to really understand.
Yes.
And that's actually a big part of the reason that I never went into the studio practice, was because for me, like, art making is so personal that when it becomes professional, it's hard for me to balance those two aspects of how I have to function, And I think it's important for people to realize, like, making art and stuff, it's a fun job at times, but it's a job, and it's hard to balance that. And it's hard not to take it personally when it's your design that you created. Yeah. And I'm going to take a break for just a moment now. And then when we get back, I want to get into how you are creating these designs, because if I'm being 100% honest, I love it. I know some elements of, like, you know, Illustrator and Photoshop. I also grew up on those tools. I don't even remember how I got those tools, but I had them and I played with them, but I never did anything so well. So I am eager to pick your brain and figure out how all of that works.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
And now we're back with Jess Phoenix, an absolutely stunning illustrator, designer. I don't know how you want to label yourself, but I am just focused on the work and the design. And, you know, we before the break, we were talking about, you know, making your personal stuff and wanting to do your own personal stuff separate from your job. And my own personal practice, I knew, like, I'm never going to be selling this stuff of, like, breakdancing robots and a seagull playing a guitar. But, you know, you are doing some amazing work with patterns and these floral designs and these bright, bold colors that are so eye-catching. And I'm curious, like, before you said, you know, there's like the goth kid in you and everything. And I don't see that so much in your work. It's so bright, and I smile every time it pops up in my feed. I'm curious, like, what's driving you in creating these? How are you starting off your design process? Are you starting with an idea like, oh, I'm going to do a silhouette and I'm going to fill it with this floral pattern? Or are you starting off thinking like, oh, I've got this color and this shape, and then that leads to something else, and then it evolves more organically? Just, you know, walk me through how a good artist thinks through their work.
I think it always comes down to color. I think I'll have kind of a general sense in my mind of maybe some of the color ways or relationships that I want to be playing with. It doesn't always work out the way that I thought, but, you know, I always get somewhere, even if it's not the best. I mean, there's still pieces of mine that, like, I think they're okay, but I can see, like, oh man, I was really struggling with that one. I think sometimes it's, as far as like the flower forms, I think I'll sometimes see something that's interesting as well. I make up a lot of the flowers. I mean, for some of the projects that I've done recently, I've heavily had to reference real flowers because that's what the client wants. And that's fine by me. I mean, I'm really excited to, mm-hmm. you know, do that sort of thing. But for the most part, I'm just kind of like, okay, big bloom in the middle, other color buds here and there. And then you have your leaves and those are your dark areas and then your light areas. And then it's just kind of like, yeah, that back and forth of pulling something forward, bringing something back. And then always the background color completely changing everything that you do in the piece. Sometimes I'll be working on like a piece of artwork and I'll have this set color for the background the whole time. And then at one point I'm like, well, what if I change it to this? And then it's just like explosions, like, oh my gosh, that's far better. That's what I should be doing.
Yeah.
And I'll sometimes share those with people on my Instagram. I'll be like, hey, I have two colorways.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun for me to make it so I just change the background color. And like, so people can almost see like, okay, this design with this color in the background, none of the other elements have changed versus this one, you know? And so seeing what people resonate with, it's never like what's better, but it's just, yeah, like what tickles your brain. And it's always interesting seeing what people come up with. I'm surprised sometimes, but yeah.
It is interesting, you know, the way that color resonates so deeply with people. I mean, as you say, the change of one color can make all the difference in a piece. You know, I personally am always drawn to a good mix of like Prussian and cerulean blue. For me, that's like, you know, my brain tingles as it's just such a satisfying harmony. But I've also struggled a lot with color in my own personal work. And so I want to get into a little bit with that color because you've got stuff that is very bright and bold and saturated in a lot of ways. And then I'll sometimes see like it shifts to a sort of more muted and subdued thing, like, you know, a flower that's maybe a softer pastel pink that's right next to like something that feels really bold and saturated with a blue, you know, or a bold magenta next to a pastel color. And I'm curious, do you start off with sort of like a color palette in mind of like, okay, I know these are like my four core colors and maybe I'll bring in these as an accent, or are you just doing this adjusting on the
fly? I'm doing a lot of adjusting. I mean, I do think, yeah, I'll generally get a sense of a color palette that I might want to use. I mean, usually like my leaves are always going to sit either in this really like deep, like almost black. I mean, I used to do completely black, which I haven't done in a while. But like, you know, cobalt and just very deep and almost purple in how things shift in that way. Or sometimes mm-hmm. like a lot more like, you know, green or teal. I always have those leaves to know like, okay, that's how things are going to be for that. And then, yeah, like lighter blooms or bold pops. It's like, will the main flower be really light and pastel, or will that one be kind of the more, you know, fire engine red that just, you know, vibrates off of everything. And yeah, I mean, I will take a color. I'll sometimes just like pick whatever color I can in Photoshop, fill that blossom, like at least like an area, and then go right into the hue saturation adjusters and then start playing. And then just using that slider, going back and forth, seeing like, okay, do I like that? And then once, like with a lot of flowers, once I get that level, okay, what about the detail on top of it or behind it? Every little flower needs to have its own little complementary things that are going on, its own little interactions. So yeah.
Speaking of complementary, like as you're looking at these and you know, sometimes you're deciding like, am I going to put complementary colors next to each other, or am I going to keep it more in like a monochrome, or, well, none of your work is really monochrome, but, you know, how do you make those decisions, or like what is shaping those choices for you in terms of like the intensity of the hues or the juxtapositions, like which colors are going next to each other? Do you want it to be more vibrant? Do you want it to be more subtle? Like, how are you making that choice about where it should be more or less intense of the contrast and stuff like that?
I think it's tough at the very beginning because since I'll usually have a section of the piece that I'm working on that at least like has maybe one of the blooms, one of the leaves, some of the background elements. And then I'll just play with those guys and get kind of like a harmonious color thing going with them. And I don't always know if I want, I mean, I do sometimes go about knowing that, all right, I do want this to be a little more of a quieter piece, or I just really want to knock everybody over the head with, you know, electric magenta on teal and, you know, just go really crazy. And then once I've kind of made a little section look how I want, then I'll start building the rest of the piece, populating everything. And then sometimes I'm like, oh, that doesn't work. So then I have to do the old, like, I make a layer on top of everything in Photoshop and then just paint big blobs of color over areas. And then, so then I can like adjust all at once, all the little buds that I thought I wanted to be hot pink. And then I realized that's too much. And so then I'm kind of seeing how the whole piece would look if everything was more of a purple or, you know, something else. It's nice when everything comes together right at the beginning, but yeah, I don't know. I feel like there are some pieces where I am, yeah, just trying my darndest to make it look right. And it's not going to be right. And that's why I am thankful that I work in Photoshop. So sometimes I'll create a piece and I'll put it out there. I'm like, hey, this, you know, it's good. I like it. I wouldn't share it if I thought it was bad. But, and then I can revisit it though, like months later when I have a fresh eye. And be like, ah, you know what I think would actually help this piece? And it's usually a complete recolor. And that's usually a fun exercise for me to revisit pieces and then just apply a whole new palette. And a lot of the pieces of artwork that I've made that way, they weren't my favorite back then. And then I changed them and now they're one of my favorites. It's funny how that works sometimes.
Yeah. So it sounds to me like you're starting off with an idea for a mood, a vibe that you want to create. Do you want it to be more subdued and relaxing? Do you want it to be more jarring and eye-catching and bold? And then you're experimenting with the color scheme throughout that, which, I mean, to me, that totally makes sense. That's kind of how I go with a lot of stuff. I'm selecting elements based on a lot of times mood and in what I'm trying to create. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious because as I look at your stuff, like my own personal style, I am very much a more is more type person. I have a tendency to turn everything up to 11. But as I look at your patterns, there's a lot going on, but I've never looked at something of yours that felt overwhelming. And so I'm curious, how do you know when to stop?
Well,
you know what I'm saying? It's a legit question that I think a lot of people, as they're creating, you know, you look at something and, you know, you add something more and it's like, oh, that looks so much better. That added detail is so great. But then, you know, you add too much and it becomes cluttered. It becomes confusing. It becomes, you know, you lose the focus. So like, how do you strike that balance and how do you know when you've hit the right balance?
It depends on the type of pattern I'm planning on making. I'm finding that I'm trying to do a lot more, more structured patterns just as a style, like, you know, kind of that wallpaper style where you have a motif and then you can really just see the repeat of it, like going, you know, horizontal and vertical. That's new to me because I always used to just kind of build things in a very busy, messy way. There's so much, like, it's a lot of intuition too. Like, I think the hard part with building patterns is you don't really know how it's all going to look until you really get it into an intense repeat where you're seeing it, you know, really zoomed out. Then you know, like, oh yeah, that's a little too much, or I mean, that's at the wrong angle. Since the very beginning, there's a kind of like golden painting motif that I've added to my leaves. And it's like, I either do like, you know, kind of veins coming out or these little gold dots. And I kind of always thought that it's like, oh yeah, those are my signature touches. But I've made some patterns where I add those and I'm like, too much, don't want that. Even though it's something that I feel like people like, oh yeah, that might be a Jess Phoenix piece because it has those details. I've had to take them out of patterns because I just want the bold, clean shapes of the leaves to come forward. And I don't want it to get muddied with any other details. Mm. But sometimes I still find a place to use those. It just depends on what I'm trying to make or achieve with a pattern.
Okay. So you just sort of step back, you look at it and you just know, like, it clicks for you.
Yeah. I mean, there's no like principles that I follow.
Must be nice having talent. Ooh, I see things. I get it. I was hoping for a cheat sheet here.
I'm sorry.
I'm just trying to find it's fine. But you do it well. And for listeners, I'm going to include all of your links in the show notes, you know, your Instagram, your website, all of that, so they can see exactly what we're talking about. But as I look to wrap things up, I am still going to try to push you to pull some tips that I can use to, you know, feel like less of a failure in my own art and design. What advice would you give for aspiring artists, designers, any specific hacks that ease the workflow? You know, you've already talked a little bit about using digital methods gives you flexibility to, you know, play around with and alter the color pretty easily. But, you know, anything you would give as advice to someone to find success in the field?
Well, so I think I want to touch on like a method thing that it doesn't make things easier, but it makes things better, in my opinion.
Better is good.
Because I mean, I didn't mention about the fact that, like, yes, I mean, I'm building everything in Photoshop, but everything I do, I start with paper and pencil. I draw out a design. Then I take tracing paper and lay it over, and with markers, dried out markers, juicy markers, whatever I can find, I draw every single petal and leaf and stem. Usually one color or like a couple, just depending on what I have laying around. And then I scan that and then compose everything in Photoshop with all those pieces that I cut out and then put. So, and I get a lot of people being like, oh, what Procreate brush do you use? And I think that's like an advice that I would give is like, hey, like the iPad is great. Tablets are great. It's a wonderful tool, but try using those real mediums too and incorporating that into your artwork if you can, because I think it's a really fun way to still get your hands dirty. And in the end, you're making something that is completely your hand. There's no computer interpreting, you know, oh, with this brush, they moved it this way. It's like if somebody moves a brush this way with the same pressure as, you know, the next person in a, you know, using an iPad, they're going to get the same texture. They're going to get the same brush. But if you use marker, tempera paint, anything, and you do that, it's completely yours, 100% unique to you. And I think that's especially very good to find as you're developing your style. I mean, I know some people, like, digital artwork is very, like, you know, it's so intense. And I just feel like the people that go for it all digitally, like the intricacies and light, and it's beautiful. And I don't knock it at all, but I don't feel like I could work that way. But yeah, I don't know. I that's something that I generally tell people to just never neglect the magic that can happen when you put pen or pencil to paper.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I think there's something really nice about, for the artists themselves, getting that tactile experience of creating with traditional media. Obviously, I, as a very old person, can totally relate to that. But I think you're making a really interesting point about how the marks that you make are fundamentally different when it's your own mark with, you know, ink or paint on paper or whatever, and then you digitize it compared to a completely digital rendition. And I think on some level, for the viewer, there's a difference. I mean, we, in the very first segment, one of the first things we talked about was like Cy Twombly and mm-hmm. de Kooning and, you know, those artists who were so much about the expressive qualities of the individual artist's idiosyncratic mark making. And I think that resonates with people because that's where we get the human connection with the art.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that you're doing that in your work is probably why I look at it and I have that sense of peace and connection. It's that organic, natural feel. It's comforting in a sort of way to see these organic shapes that come from a natural process. And I don't see the evidence of like a pencil or anything in the final work, but I feel like there's some echo of it there, you know, because it does, your work, as I've looked at it, it always did feel to me, or does feel to me. I don't know. I went to school for coloring. I don't know how the English language is structured, but your work has this human touch that I find very appealing. And I think that's, I'm certainly not alone. You've got like a bazillion followers and everything like that. But I do appreciate that. And I think that's really good advice and a good way to end the show. So I'm just going to say now, thank you so much. Once again, Jess Phoenix, listeners, I will put all the links in the show notes. Definitely worth looking at and following on Instagram or whatever the kids are into these days. Thank you so much for taking the time to share your insights today.
Thanks for having me. It's been really fun.
This concludes this week's episode of Who Arted, part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. If you found this tolerable, please leave a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. You can find images of the work being discussed this week and every week on social media at Who Arted Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, and of course on the website whoartedpodcast.com.
Podcast done.